Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hello and welcome to the Modern Homesteading Podcast. This is your host, Rachel Jamieson. Today I have with me Parker and Lauren Holmes. Hello, Parker and Lauren.
Hi.
Hi.
How are you guys today?
Good. How are you?
Good. So I was going to, in that introduction, I was going to say the name of your homestead, but I wasn't sure exactly how you wanted to introduce that. So why don't you give me a little bit of an introduction to yourself and then the name of your homestead and your and or your businesses that you have going on.
Okay. I'm Parker, here with my wife, Lauren, and our homestead or our business name, technically, I guess, is Homestead Provisions, spelled like our last name. A lot of people are like, what's Homestead Provisions? And then it's like, oh, wait a minute. And they kind of put two and two together. So do you have anything to add to that?
Well, the business portion is we're a farm and a sawmill. So we raise animals and sell them by the cut directly to consumers. And we also have a portable sawmill that we offer services and lumber and all that. So that kind of all falls under Homestead Provisions. So.
Very cool. So you guys are in Central Michigan.
Yeah.
Basically, kind of.
Yeah.
So for people that are interested in looking you up and having your services, they're in Central Michigan. Yeah. What got you guys into homesteading? Did you guys grow up doing this? Was it a dream you had your whole life?
Well, I grew up just outside of Minneapolis in the suburbs. So this has been started for me really when I married him, but we kind of came to it together, I guess. So it's totally new for me, but Parker, you want to share?
So I grew up in the Cadillac area, kind of close to where we are now. And I don't know, Dad always grew a big garden every year. And I don't know, back in the day, I remember Mom canning a few things. We weren't really, I guess, like all out homesteading, like into all the homesteady stuff. But just enough to provide a little extra food and stuff like that for the family when I was growing up. So I just kind of learned a few things from Mom and Dad.
I guess to answer the question of how we came to it was... how many years ago? 6 years ago, 6-7 years ago, maybe. We had a close friend and a family member get sick with autoimmune diseases, and they started turning from, instead of using medication, they turned to diet, and they had a lot of success just with whole foods. And so that kind of got us into thinking about what we're putting in our bodies. And where our food comes from, which kind of started us down the whole rabbit hole of.
Yeah, that actually got me. I think you're talking about the guy I was working with at the time. Yeah. A coworker of mine, he had some autoimmune issues. And one day at lunch at work, I was like, what are you eating? And he, you know, because it just looked strange to the person who only knew the typical
American diet,
sad American, standard American diet.
Yeah.
And I was just intrigued. I was like, what is this dish? And I just had to know. And I tried some, and he told me all about what he's doing and everything. I was like, that's pretty cool. And I was like, I don't think I have any problems, but I kind of want to eat like this anyway.
Yeah.
So I started down that whole thing, and then I was, I think part of it was I was listening to a podcast. I was just like, I had podcasts on like random or something on my phone. I don't know what happened, but I was at work and this podcast came up about no-till agriculture and all that stuff. And I just happened to be tilling at the time too. I was running a tractor.
Like, wow.
So listening to that, it was like convicting. I was like, I need to shut this tractor off. What's going on? So that tied together with the food thing brought us to this, I guess, where we are. And some of that was finding out about Polyface Farm and Joel Salatin and all that. And that's, we can credit a lot of what we do now to learning from those ways.
So. Yeah. And you were, at the time, it was a transition. We were getting married. And we were moving to Lansing, Michigan for Parker to go to school for farming, all while we're getting into the no-till agriculture, organic, regenerative agriculture stuff. And that clearly did not mix with what you were learning at MSU. So it was like quick, we got into that, realized what he was doing at MSU, and found our way
from there.
What were you going to MSU for?
Oh, I was going for their ag tech program.
Okay. Okay.
Which I didn't really know, I guess, what I was getting into at the time. I thought I would learn like different, or a more diverse array of types of farming, I guess you could say, but it was pretty, pretty much spray this, spray that, and kill this and kill that. So, and then I got depressed pretty quick. So
it's interesting that you talked about the health perspective, because it seems to be a common thread for many of the people I know homesteading, is they got into it either because they were having health problems or for the health of it. But that's really cool. So what did you do after you decided that you needed to change your plan from going to MSU? I mean, did you continue to go to MSU? Did you take classes elsewhere to learn a lot of what you're doing now? Cause you guys are doing some really cool stuff, and you know, I mean, you've taught some classes and stuff. So what got you from there to where you are now?
So I continued, I kind of knew early on that it wasn't for me. MSU wasn't for me, but I was like, well, I should probably do what I can to finish this. And it kind of reached a breaking point. And I remember, the application for Polyface internship,
Joel Salatin's.
Yeah. That came out like, As I was going back into my second year at MSU, and I was like, man, I would love to do this, but I'm kind of stuck at school. And Lauren here, she said, well, what the heck? Why not just apply? You don't have anything to lose. Just do it. And I was at a point where like, okay, if I get this, I'm not going back to school. Like, this is my sign. I'm not doing it. Cause I was fed up and I wasn't enjoying it anyway. Wasn't learning. I was learning what I'd already knew coming from that conventional farm aspect. So, I ended up applying and ended up going to Polyface. So that's kind of,
that's really, really cool. So you ended up being an intern for Joel Salatin.
Yep. I was an apprentice. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and what did you end up doing there?
Well, a little bit of everything.
It was life-changing.
It was. So I got to, this is a rare occurrence, but me and the other apprentice, we got to skip the internship.
Oh,
and okay. Yeah, because usually you got to be an intern before you can be an apprentice. And
they had a weird year where they needed two apprentices and didn't have anyone.
Yeah, from the previous year.
So they picked out a couple, Parker and another girl, that were applying to be interns.
Yep.
To be the apprentice. So
I got to come In like, I think it was February, I went down there and I just started learning everything, how they did everything, you know, from moving cattle, moving pigs, building infrastructure, all that stuff. And they wanted me to know as much as possible by the time that summer's interns arrived, so I could help
in May
lead and instruct and teach the interns what I had learned beforehand. So that was kind of my job, I guess you could say, when I was there.
So it's fair to say that was, I mean, and you've already said that it was life-changing and changed the way you thought about homesteading and farming.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
Wow.
Yeah, I just learned so much. I'd say I learned a lot about leadership. That turned me on to a lot of leadership books.
It wasn't learned how to do everything very
efficiently.
Efficiently.
Yeah, learned a lot of efficiency. But it wasn't
just the farming stuff. It was a lot
that
of just
really cool
leadership.
That's something I never considered, but that's really, really helpful.
Yes.
It opened our eyes to a whole new perspective on things, I feel like, since then.
Yeah.
And it's helped us be successful in how we're raising our animals, because we learned from the best who's figured it out 40 years ago, you know, like,
that experience is huge. Yeah. Yeah. So how long were you there?
It was a total
roughly 2 years.
Yeah. Under 2 years.
Yeah.
Cause he did the apprenticeship,
and then we did some contract farming as well.
Okay.
So,
now you have brought that back and you have your own little place.
Yeah.
Tell me what kind of animals and like how much acreage you have and what you're doing at your place.
All right. we have a 50 acre piece. It's 20 acres pasture, 30 acres kind of scrubby woods. It was an old pine plantation that got clear cut 10 or 12 years ago, and it's kind of come back in some scrub woods, but good for pigs. Good for pigs. So that being said, we have pigs and we're raising broiler chickens. We have laying hens and sheep currently.
Mm-hmm.
We would love to get some cattle, but fencing thing is,
we have no perimeter fencing. So
okay.
Right now. Yeah. So
our pigs are in two wire, aluminum wire, electric fence in the woods. And we rotate them every few days, every week to new pasture.
Okay.
And the broilers move every day. The hens are in electric Premier One electric netting. They move every few days, and the sheep also move every other day in electric net. So
very cool. What kind of pigs did you guys end up deciding on?
We have, so I wasn't too concerned about a specific breed. I just knew kind of, I mean, I don't want to base everything I do off from Polyface, but it's kind of, it's kind of hard not to. But I mean, if you're looking at pigs, experience. Yeah. From my experience, I just didn't want, you know, show pigs, the muscly right.
Yeah.
Box looking, the ones that look like a bulldog, you know, they just don't perform real well out on pasture in the woods. They don't forage as much. So we actually went with a cross between Red Wattle and Berkshire.
Okay.
But I mean, for us, I mean,
it's our third
Tamworth, Duroc, Old Spot. All those would be great options that I wouldn't have any problem with. Yeah. They'd be great. Okay.
Third season raising this type.
Yeah.
Okay. And you guys are selling those as not as quarters and halves, but you're selling those as
by the cut. Yes.
By the cut. Okay.
Yep.
Very cool. Are you selling your broilers too, or are those just for your own?
Yes, we're selling those as well. Yeah.
And eggs too.
And eggs.
Okay. Nice.
And someday the lamb.
Yeah, we'll be offering lamb probably in January. So
do you guys have lamb?
We do. We have We only have 10 of them right now, but we're just kind of dabbling with.
Our first time ever doing
the
sheep. So it's been a little bit of a learning curve. We got a dog, a livestock guardian dog. Okay. So that's more of a learning curve than anything.
Yep.
What kind of sheep did you end up choosing?
We got Katahdin.
Okay.
The hair sheep. So
yeah, I like those. Meat.
Yep. I don't have to mess with any shearing or anything. Yes. Yeah.
And what kind of livestock guardian dog did you guys end up with?
We ended up getting a Great Pyrenees.
Okay.
And I believe she has just a touch of Anatolian as well. That's what I was told. So.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of people combining those two.
Yeah.
She's great.
She's a great dog.
Awesome. Yeah. We've had.
Especially for being just a young pup. So.
Okay. Cool. So what, you said you have a sawmill. What got you into the whole sawmill?
Okay. So, my dad, so I grew up with him, going to work with him a lot and stuff. And he was in the logging industry. He owned a logging company for 30, 35 years, something like that. And he had a sawmill as well, but it was more like a hobby for him. He just liked milling up logs that he would bring home from the woods. And he'd barter with a couple, you know, woodworkers and stuff, and he'd give them some lumber, and they'd build them some furniture, stuff like that. So I kind of grew up around that. But I was young at the time, and my dad never really let me run the mill. So I didn't know how much I would have liked it. And then, let's see, some things happened and he decided to sell his sawmill, and I never really, I didn't think of it again. That was 10 years ago or so. And then I went to Polyface and Joel, of course, is big on his sawmill, 'cause he turns a lot of wood, a lot of timber into usable lumber at his place. So
timber from their
acres. Yeah. From their acreage. So I started running his sawmill, and I was like, man, this is a lot of fun. I enjoy this a lot. And
Parker quickly became the guy who runs the mill, because he was so happy every time milling that it became clear that
he's
great at it. But
okay. So I kind of remember that kind of brought up memories of me and dad, you know, running the sawmill together and all that stuff. So I was like, I need to get one, just because it's not only fun, it's valuable. I mean, there's so many things that we can build with one of those, you know,
right.
Produce. Yeah. So
possibilities are endless.
That is really cool. And you're doing that. You're traveling with that and taking it to people's places and cutting up lumber, basically.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. So people will call me, word of mouth, I guess. They'll get a hold of me and say, hey, I've got, oh goodness, I guess the most recent one, he had like 30 logs or something from his woods out back that he didn't really want to cut into firewood, because it was good wood and it's more value than firewood.
Right.
So he said, hey, I heard you got a sawmill. I said, yeah. And I explained to him my rate and how it works. And he was happy, and I pulled it over to his place, and we set it up and rolled the logs on, and away we went, made some lumber. He was pretty excited.
Cool.
Yeah. So that's, I go to people's places, wherever. Yeah. I can go. So,
and you also,
I also purchase logs from local loggers in this area. So I'm also selling lumber as well.
Or if someone calls and says, hey, I need 10 2x4s and 14 2x6s, they can put in an order and Parker will mill it.
I'll mill it up for them and they can come get it, or I can deliver as well too for a fee. So.
And the cabin.
Yeah. I recently got into milling up cabin kits. So say somebody wants a small hunting cabin or something on their property. Their hunting property. I've got log cabin kits, timber frame cabin kits through a guy, barngeek.com. He sells a bunch of plans. So People can get in touch with him. He can design them a little cabin or a barn or whatever they're looking for, I guess.
Many sizes.
Yeah, timber frame style, which is pretty neat. The aesthetic is really nice. So I got in contact with him. So if there's anyone in our area, he reaches out to me. Hey, so-and-so ordered this kit from me. Can you mail it up? Here's the cut list, that kind of deal. So, yeah.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
Those I've seen, well, we saw one at Baker's go up. I haven't seen it finished, but I went to his website and some of those, they're really pretty too. I like how they look. They're not your normal barn.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Right.
Yeah. They look more like the old school barn to me.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. They're framed the same way. They're just, they use steel joinery instead of mortise and tenon. It's a lot faster, easier to put up really, honestly.
And it's very affordable.
Yeah. And it's very affordable.
Yeah. And it's really pretty. And when I say barn, I don't mean like this huge, huge structure, because they can be big, but they could also be pretty small too. Yeah. That's really cool. So have you been doing a lot of those yet, or?
A couple. Yep. Okay. And I'm currently milling, a log cabin kit. Actually I already milled one. I'm on another one, I guess. Square logs. People can just, you know, link and log them together. And then cut windows and doors in them. That's pretty neat. So
when you say a kit, it's like something that somebody can just put together themselves.
Yeah.
The plans kind of include all of that. And then you mill all the lumber for it. And
yes,
that's really cool. We actually built a house that way, a whole house that way.
Really?
Yeah. Nice. When we were in our early 20s, we did.
Amazing. Oh my.
Yeah. Yeah. It was really cool. It's really nice though. I mean, it does really, when you get the right person doing the plans, it all comes.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually not as hard as it sounds.
Yeah.
And yet it's every bit as hard as it sounds.
Right.
Yeah. But that's cool. So you guys have just started all this though. I mean, from talking to you, it sounds like you've had all of this going on for years and years and years, but I haven't even known you that long, but I've actually known you long enough to know before you started this, and now you're moving into all these animals and having these, this little homestead that you have going on. How long have you guys been working on your little homestead here?
We got back from Polyface May of last year, of 22. Wow. So just over a year, I guess.
We purchased the property that spring before we moved.
Yeah.
You guys have been really, really
dabbled with it, but we never could dig our heels in and fully do it all because we didn't own property and we were moving between ventures and everything. So in a year of fully doing it, I'm on my second garden ever and have had some fails, but have had some successes too. So it's fun.
Well, I've been gardening for 30 years and I had fails this year. So, you know, it happens.
It happens. Yeah.
She took a picture yesterday of what she harvested in the garden. And I was picking up some building supplies and she sent me a picture and I looked at it and I was just like, I'm so proud. It was great.
Well, I think this year, I've said this on Instagram, but this year is like the year I fell in love with gardening, because it's like, it's been this huge unknown to me and I've been scared of it. And I hear people talk about their gardens and I'm just like, I want to do that, but I have no idea how. I don't even know what I'm talking about. Last year's garden was kind of just a wash. I don't even know what happened. But this year I feel like I've actually can kind of understand how things work, and I'm learning. I'm really finding the beauty in it, failures or successes, and I have real expectations too. I realize that's how it always will be. And I just,
that's cool.
I love the possibility of it all. So
do you have something that you're really excited to grow or that you want to grow in the future?
I don't think I can choose to the one. Okay. Honestly, I want to do cut flowers. I want to do popcorn, which is just silly. We would love to do, we've talked about like offering a full menu farm. If you want to explain
that. That would be really cool.
Yeah, that'd be really cool to just be able to provide the cooking fat, the broth, the maple syrup.
So are you guys considering doing something like, you're already offering, you know, the meat. Are you considering doing vegetables and maybe like other parts, like a CSA type thing?
That's up to Lauren.
We'll see. Yeah. Yeah.
The gardening, how it goes.
It's hard. Like you toss all these ideas. I know I have my own ideas around in my head about doing, you know, the CSAs or something like that. And because Michigan has the cottage food law, which makes it tempting to, you know, do some of that. And, but it's another thing to actually bite off that and say that I'm actually going to do it. So, yeah.
We also really want to have, like berry bushes and an orchard with fruit and everything.
So we can offer fruit, vegetables.
And first and foremost, meat for ourselves.
Yeah.
But it'd be really cool, even for just a few families, like just a handful.
Yeah.
My
brother and his wife just recently got into beekeeping. So honey that we'll be able to offer people as well. Yeah. So.
And I like to make soap and tallow balms and all that stuff. So it'd be cool. Just
pile it all together.
That's why we named our business.
Homestead provisions. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
Labeled under.
So are you guys, what do you have any exciting news like in the next year that is going on that you have 100% plans for or?
Not really.
We're really fly by the seat of our
pants. Currently. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, so you guys were talking earlier about when you were with Joel and all the stuff that you learned from him. What are some of the things that you would implement as far as you were saying the time-saving things that you learned? Because I know he does a lot of what permaculture calls function stacking. I know he does a lot of that on his farm. What are some of the things that you learned there that you're going to use on your at your place?
So a lot of it comes down to really time and motion study stuff. That was a lot of where the efficiencies came in. How to move a broiler shelter efficiently. Like when you get there, it's really funny. If you've never seen one moved by one of the Salatins or something, you get there and they're like, okay, move this shelter. And it's like a little like test or something like how is this guy going to move it? You know, and you go to move it and it's just like, wow, that took 2 minutes. And then Daniel moves it or something. And it's 30 seconds. And it's like, whoa. So a lot of time and motion.
Butchering
chickens. Yeah, that was incredible. Just the technique that goes into that and just repeat, you know.
Yeah, those would be really interesting to see you guys,
guys
do that. Because I know that I read the book Lean Farm.
Yep.
Yeah, and I know that I need to work on that. And that's part when, as we're developing our other homestead, I'm trying to think about those things to make it more efficient. Because it definitely, you walk and you walk and you walk and then you go back and forth. You waste so much time. I know I do here. Doing things because my tools aren't right there in the garden and stuff like that.
Yeah. I mean, even down to always come loaded and always go loaded, you know, like two buckets all the time. Don't ever just carry one bucket of water, carry two buckets. Even if you don't need it, you're going to need it there someday anyway. So you just take it and leave it and it's there and it's easier to carry, you know, balance. So
it's actually funny when we for one summer after he apprenticed, we contracted And so we, how many broiler shelters did you have?
24.
24 broiler shelters. So it took both of us going out there, and it was, I mean, how long did it take you? Like 30 minutes?
Probably. To move everything?
To move just the broilers?
Just under, yeah.
Yeah. So like never have 24 broiler shelters.
Nah, knock on wood. We might. You never really? Know. You never know.
never say never, right?
Yeah, that's a lot of chicken.
So it's, you learned all those efficiencies for having that many shelters in it.
So you moved 24 broiler shelters in 30 minutes.
Yeah. I could move a shelter and be on to the next one in 45 seconds. That's hustling.
That's
not feeding and watering. That's just moving everything.
Right. So
then I'd have to come back through. Lauren would do that. Yeah. Yeah. She was always assisting. So she'd be feeding and watering while I was moving. And it was a good team effort. So
I think that is something a lot of homesteads, including my own, especially my own, could learn more from. I mean, reading the book, but actually reading that book Lean Farm, but actually seeing it done are two different things. And just that whole efficiency with that.
Yeah. There's this thing, I think they're still doing it. It's called Polyface Intensive Discovery Seminar. And it's a few days, two or three days, I think. And I'm sure there's a wait list if they're still doing it.
They just had their last one this season.
Oh, okay. Yeah. But as an apprentice and as intern or we got to sit in on that with all the people that kind of came and showed up for that to attend. And you learn pretty much everything really fast. I mean, intensive discovery seminar, it's intense. They go over everything that they taught us in a matter of a couple of days. And it's like people, you see the smoke coming off the notepad, you know, and people are just writing stuff down, trying to keep up. But
and you're there, so they traveled right and walked to the fields.
But write down to all the efficiencies. So
the marketing
people are marketing, all that stuff. But that is a really good source or resource, I guess.
Okay.
If anyone is interested in that,
yeah, I'll put that in the show notes.
Yeah,
people can maybe get on the waiting line.
Yeah,
if there is one.
Yeah.
Now you guys, and then you talked about the leadership. How do you think that how does that roll over into homesteading, that leadership?
Just learning to understand, it wasn't so much being a boss or anything, but learning to adapt and understand other people's needs and abilities. Well, Lauren, for instance, it was cool because she got to come when I was an apprentice. She got to.
They just let me come along for the ride.
Yeah.
Literally.
So she was helping us one day, and I'll never forget this. She was helping. It was me and Daniel, and we were going to move some pigs. And I was, you know, of course, I was like, come on, Lauren, you got to do it this way. Come on, you know, move the pigs.
It was lifting the gators.
Yeah. Just do it this way. And she was kind of struggling a little bit
because I didn't have the strength to lift the gate like I should have.
Yeah. Daniel was able to quickly observe and be like, hey, Lauren, why don't you try it this way? And bam, you know, that was, it worked for her. Like just being able to recognize people's strengths and weaknesses and,
instead of like forcing someone into a box, because that's what we need to do. You think outside the box of like, how can we get this done in ways that are considering that person's strengths?
Abilities. Yeah. That was huge. What else? Oh, we read, it was like a little book club thing. We read Extreme Ownership by Jocko Willink. He's a retired Navy SEAL. He's got a few books now too. But that was kind of, I think, the first one he really broke into. That was a really good book, and that, yeah, really turned me on to reading more about leadership. So,
okay.
Yeah, it was just.
Yeah, I can see how that leadership and not putting people inside the box would work really well once you have employees coming from different places, or if you never have employees, if you have children, because they're all just gifted differently. And obviously, they're going to be small enough that they probably can't do all the things sometimes.
Yep. Yeah.
And I think our relationship, both working out and trying to get things done, and we both have different ideas, and he's mainly leading us, but it has helped, I think, with his leadership towards me, because I haven't grown up at all like this. Even it was city living to country living was a whole new thing, not even farming.
Right. Yeah, I can understand that, because I didn't grow up doing any of this either, and my husband did. And even though he did things differently than how we're doing them now, some of that stuff still crosses over, and I'm still what just comes natural to him because it was how he grew up. Sometimes I'm like, what are you doing? I don't understand. And he's like, oh yeah, I guess I just didn't realize that. I just know this.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. And I can't give an exact, you know, thing, you know, but he's very good with animals, and not that I'm not, but he just has all that experience, you know, and he's like, he'd just go, when we first got chickens, he would just go pick up the chicken, and I didn't know there was a special way to do it. And he did. And he's like, no, you got to do it like this. And I'm like, oh, there's a way. I didn't even know there was a way.
Right. Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Do you guys anticipate that you're going to be, you said you have the sheep. That's kind of an experiment still. Do you guys anticipate adding other animals besides those? You said you'd like to have cattle.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. As soon as we get some solid perimeter fencing up.
We'll... Okay. So you're going to fence the whole outside before you do
cattle. Yeah. Yeah.
At least the pasture.
At least this, I'd say that border our north side that borders a neighbor and the east side that borders the road. We'll get that solid fence first.
Yeah.
And once they're trained to, you know, a single strand electric wire, I wouldn't feel too worried about letting them graze with just that single strand, you know, in the back of the property or something. That wouldn't be fine. We just have the back of the property is a bunch of woods and stuff like that. And it's
a school property. So
yeah.
People don't really go back.
Yeah. If cattle got out, I could go back and go get them, you know, but I don't want them in the road and I don't want them in the yard. So
are you guys thinking meat cattle, or are you thinking milk?
Definitely beef.
I want a dairy cow really bad, but I'm told that it's going to be my baby. Yeah. So I have to be ready to
milk it. So if you want it, you got to milk it, basically.
Yeah.
But it'd be really nice to have, really cool to have for our own consumption and pigs. And
Do you guys have breed that you've picked out that you would like for those, or you're still undecided?
Probably lean towards a Jersey.
Yeah, for the dairy.
Yeah. Yep.
And what about the beef?
Beef cattle. I know a guy up in Wisconsin. He's got really good grass fed genetics. And they're well adapted to colder climates. Okay. But it's Red Angus, but they've been grass fed genetics for quite a while now. So
that's cool.
Adapted well to only eating grass and grazing and that kind of deal. So
yeah, that's one thing you learned at Polyface is
what's that?
Like grass fed beef and I don't know.
Okay.
I bet it is.
Well, when you say they've been adapted, I kind of know what you're saying just because I talk to people a lot. Not that I've ever raised any, but what do you mean when you say an animal has been adapted to
so
the way that we prefer, I mean, the grass-fed.
So kind of an epigenetics thing. I don't know if you've heard of that.
Yes.
You start something and then just generationally, they adapt to that environment better. Okay. They pick up those traits from the previous generation, and they continually do better in that situation, I guess, or in that, I mean, climate.
Growth.
So like these are smaller framed red Angus. They're not huge because it's harder to maintain and grow a large animal, obviously. Yes. So, when I say grass fed genetics, something that does well on grass, maintains weight, puts on weight, and
because what you're saying is if you just went and bought a cow that had everything out for the previous generations, it had been fed more like most cows are fed now, which is a lot of grain, mm-hmm. maybe some hay, that wouldn't adapt as well, maybe, to what you want, which is you want 100% grass fed. So it might struggle a little bit more, but since it has for several generations
been
on grass, those babies have kind of just genetically developed an ability to do better on just grass.
Yes.
That's kind of what you're saying. Okay. Yeah.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best. It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line. It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI. It's possible because we're already doing it, all while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Now, what are you doing? Speaking of grass, so you're starting, has this place ever been farmed where you're at? Are you starting fresh?
So yeah, we are pretty fresh. It's next to, so the reason, one of the main reasons we got it is because it borders my dad's property. So we're next door neighbors with my dad.
And your aunt.
And my aunt. They're very close by here. But my dad has owned his property since 1976 or 77. And he does not remember this field that we bought ever being farmed.
Okay.
It has had hay taken off it, maybe a few years here and there. By neighboring people in the area. But as for tillage, well, up until the year we bought it, the year before we bought it, some guy decided he was just gonna, he knew the previous owner of the property and he decided to plow it all up, and it's okay. But that's the only time it's ever really been plowed that my dad even remembers in 50 years. So we're starting pretty fresh.
Okay. And so what are you doing? Especially, I find this interesting considering that you were at Joel's and he is the guru on improving pastures. So what are you doing to improve that pasture so that you can eventually put, or you already have animals on it, but for your animals?
Yeah. So we actually still have yet to take soil samples because I want to get a good baseline of where we're at and just someday be able to look back and say, wow, this is because it's going to improve just with the chickens and the sheep. It's already
right in
spots. We've seen some serious grass growth and it's really dramatic because it's kind of cruddy right now. So when something comes back, it's like, whoa, look at that.
We spend almost hours out in the pasture looking at the growth from as we move them. And
yeah, well, it's cool to see what
deep green that comes back,
what kind of grasses there are, what weeds are there and then absent after certain animals have been there, whether they get eaten or fertility. Like I know when the chickens, when I moved the broiler chickens over some spotted knapweed, when that grass starts to come back, that knapweed is gone. It just like, don't know where it went, but it's no longer needed.
Interesting.
So it's pretty neat to see that transformation happen. I also scored some compost from a local dairy farm and it's been aging now for a year. It's probably pretty good. As soon as I can get my hands on a spreader, I would love to spread that and add some fertility that way.
Are you guys sowing any?
No.
Okay. I didn't know.
I haven't done that at all. Just in the forest paddocks behind the pigs after they're done in an area, I'll just seed some like a diverse cover crop in there.
Okay. That's cool. Has that been going well? Because are you guys having a more dry summer kind of like we are?
It started dry, but we've had pretty good rain. We've had rain once a week at least. So.
Oh, okay. So how is that going after that year? So you're moving the pigs through the woods and then you're cover cropping. I bet you that is starting to look so pretty.
Yeah, it looks really good. And all I'm doing is just broadcasting too. I'm not going in there with any equipment or anything. I'm just throwing seed and it takes root and away we go.
Nice. Nice.
But it looks really well.
So when you talk, I spend a lot of time like walking through the woods and hiking through our pasture, what will hopefully be our pasture. And I'm still learning to like, the grasses seem so much harder for me to identify than say plants because they all look so similar. How have you learned to identify the grasses and the weeds in your pasture when they all look to the rest of us about the same thing?
So there are some obvious differences and then there's ones that aren't so obvious. There's like bunch grasses. When they seed out, it's a lot easier to tell. You know, you can tell Johnson grass from Timothy really easily. Or like rye grass or wheat grass or something. Those are pretty easy to tell when they seed out. But when they're, you know, in that tender growing stage, I mean, without getting in and looking at ligules and all the hairy stems and everything. Okay. And having a book next to you to tell you.
That's what I was wondering. Is there like a book or an app or are you going solely on experience at this point?
Oh no, if I want to go out in the field right now and really dig in, I'm going to need a book, but there are a few species I can point out.
Okay.
So, but
is there a book that you prefer or no?
Oh goodness. I've got it.
I put you on the spot. Sorry.
Well, that brings up some good ones about weeds. Lauren just said, like, there's a book on weeds. It's called When Weeds Talk. That's a really good one.
Yeah, yeah.
There's also another one I actually screenshotted the other day.
When Weeds Talk is the one where it basically is telling you that if this weed shows up, this is what's going on in the soil.
Yeah.
Those books are so helpful. Okay. That's really cool.
Another book that or person that has really helped us, Parker. This was at the beginning of when we got started. Parker went to the Michigan Small Farms Conference and he heard Richard Perkins talk. Richard is from Sweden, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
And
he has a farm in Sweden.
He actually talked about Joel Salatin, their friends. And that's kind of how we got on the Joel train. But Richard has lots of information out on YouTube and that we would highly recommend.
Yeah, he's got some.
We were probably wandering around that conference. We were wandering around that conference together and we didn't even know it because I went to the conference that he was at too.
Yeah,
oh, that's cool.
That was a good one. I found this other book. It's called Weeds, Guardians of the Soil.
Oh, okay.
That's a good one. That was recommended to me by Ray Archuleta, who's also another very knowledgeable guru.
Very cool. Because, I mean, it is kind of overwhelming when you listen to, you forget what you know. So, like, you listen to Joel talk or listening to you talk about the different grasses. Like, we forget that we once knew nothing. And then we start talking and people are like, whoa, I don't even understand. Like, I don't even know what rye looks like versus wheat looks like. Mm-hmm. And, because we just forget where we came from, you know, we forget that how much we've learned. And so that's why I was asking if you had books and recommendations so that people listening can maybe go and start to learn some of this. Cause I know a lot of people are looking forward to having grass-fed animals on their properties, even though a lot of our listeners have very small homesteads. Some of them have larger ones. Do you guys have any plans to have smaller animals other than chickens? like rabbits or anything?
We have a lot of wild rabbits.
Yeah, I know. Same here.
Yeah. Not at the moment, I don't think. Okay. Maybe once things get rolling and established well, I can broaden into those other, you know, areas.
Very cool. I am excited. You guys have an Instagram page. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Do you have any other social media pages or a website?
Yeah, we have a website. It's just our business name, homesteadprovisions.com. And we have a Facebook page for that too. I actually just started that too. And it's just Homestead Provisions.
Cool.
Instagram is called This Homestead Life. So
yeah, that's right. It is called that.
Yes. It's a little different. All with our last name. Don't forget the L.
Yeah.
Yes. It's Homestead, not Homestead. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I will put the links for that in the show notes. Cool. Is there anything else that you guys would like to add that we didn't talk about?
Not that I can think of. Yeah. Unless you have any more questions.
Can't think of anything.
I'm trying to think of more questions. I just think it's so cool that you got to learn from Joel. And I'm sure that if somebody's interested in doing that, you would highly suggest that they fill out that paperwork and try to get in there.
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. Great experience, I'm sure.
Yep. It was a wonderful experience. So
yeah, that's super cool.
Teaches you to be creative too with things. Not settling for one way to do something. It's like, let's explore, you know, let's try this. And if we fail, we fail. It's, you know, try a different thing. Forget who said, if you're not failing at one thing at least once a year, you're not trying hard enough or something like that.
Yeah.
One of those guys.
Yeah. Well, failure is so important. And I think we forget that. I mean, we don't teach it to people in society. We think of failure as a bad thing, but it's actually a good thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. And in homesteading, you're going to fail.
Yeah.
Many times. I mean, I have a complete failure with my green beans. And speaking of rabbits, my first crop of green beans got ate by deer. So I learned the lesson that I needed a fence. We haven't had deer in our yard in forever. So I thought, oh, I don't need a fence. Well, they discovered I planted a garden. So they ate all of my green beans. They ate the tops off of some of my tomatoes and they ate all of the beets. So I put the fence up and then the rabbits came in and ate my second planting of green beans and beets. So yeah, you fail and it's okay. I just learned that I need to figure out a way to rabbit proof things somehow.
I would add one more thing.
Okay.
I attended, this is another cool thing to go to, I attended something called the Soil Health Academy. And they have a website. They might even be under the name Understanding Ag. They're kind of hand in hand, but that was well worth it. I actually filled out little application to go, and it was like you write a little essay or something, and it was like a scholarship. I got half of it paid for, so it was really and I don't think there's an age limit, maybe 40 or something on that, but
and that's less like Polyface. You have to be committed to 5 months away from home, not working, without your family if you're married.
This was just a 3 or 4 day course. Yeah, instruction. Okay. And I learned a ton.
More than you learned in a semester of college.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
Okay.
So I did that while I was at MSU, and I went back to MSU after that weekend whatever that was. And like I had ammo, you know, like to argue with some of the professors. It didn't get me very far. It got them mad at me. But other than that, It was entertaining nonetheless. I was one of the oldest people in those classes. So all these younger kids were like looking at me like, who is this guy and why is he arguing?
Tell the potato story.
One quick thing here, the potato thing. I don't want to throw them under the bus too much, but man, the potato thing. they were talking about how to keep fungus and disease and everything at bay in potato fields. And she said this herself, a professor. She said, well, the way we grow potatoes, we kind of create that they create their own little microclimate in rows like this, really close together, and it gets really humid and it holds a lot of moisture, and that creates fungus problems. And then that leads to disease problems. So we have to spray this and this and that. I raised my hand and she said, yes. I said, why are we creating that environment for them to get disease and everything? And she's like, well, that's the only way to grow potatoes. I was like, okay, I'll leave it at that.
Right. Cool. Yeah. It is it's definitely a different paradigm from what.
For sure.
I guess not. Yeah. From what we're calling it traditional ag, even though it hasn't been around that long. But yeah, from what agriculture is doing now, it's definitely, we've taken a different, at least you and I and a lot of people that follow this podcast are taking a different approach to gardening and trying to avoid all those chemicals.
Yeah. And on a mass scale, I mean, people want to buy that stuff and go to McDonald's. That's fine. But yeah, as for us, we're going to choose to grow potatoes differently.
Yes. And a homegrown potato tastes amazing.
Oh, yes. Man, that French fry. Yeah.
Instead of fighting battles with nature that we created, we want to work with nature.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Create that. Yeah. Yeah. I couldn't say it better. Well, thanks for coming on, guys. And I can't wait to see you guys again, because we're friends outside of the podcast. And I'm glad it finally worked out for us to be, for me to interview you, because I think you're doing some really cool stuff. Yeah. So I will put all of your information in the show notes. And with that, I think that we will end the podcast, and I will tell everybody to grow where you're planted.
All right.
Well, thank you for having us.
Looking around, I finally see, I think I need a change. The rat race, I wanna flee, my world I'll rearrange. I'm getting back to the roots of how it's meant to be. Growing gardens, picking fruit, raising livestock, living free. It's a modern homestead. Build a modern homestead. A lot of folks don't understand why I wanna live this way. They never eat them from their land like we do here every day. Snapping beans like grandma did, sitting on her front porch. Hunting and fishing like a kid, once you've done all of your chores. It's a modern homestead. Build a modern homestead. Country or city, there's a way to make this change. You gotta start today.